case number 10-7049. Susan Whitting, individually and on behalf of all other similarly situated appellant versus AARP and United Healthcare Insurance Company. Ms. Raphael for appellant, Mr. Edson for Appley United Healthcare Insurance Company, and Mr. Costin for Appley AARP.
Good morning, counsel for appellant.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Michelle Raphael, and I speak on behalf of plaintiff Mrs. Susan Whitting. Having been laid off from her job, Mrs. Whitting, then 59 years old, responded to defendant solicitation for health insurance, offering essential health benefits, a bridge until Medicare, and coverage for various procedures, including lab tests. She paid her premiums, yet when she underwent unexpected gallbladder surgery, she was left to pay $40,000 out of a $45,000 bill. The district court's holding that no reasonable consumer, here no reasonable ART member, could have believed that they were going to receive benefits for inpatient lab pathology or radiology services is contradicted by plaintiff's allegations, as well as defendant's marketing material and certificate of insurance, which repeatedly refer to lab pathology and radiology benefits without any outpatient limitation.
You accept that the certificate of insurance, the full text, and the promotional materials, full text, were properly before the district court?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Okay. There are a number of cases under which that would be true. I just want to make sure it wasn't disputed here.
No, sir.
Were you done, Steve?
Yeah.
Oh. You were, in your point that you just made, you were referring to the schedule of benefits, right? Which doesn't limit radiology and lab pathology to...
The schedule of benefits, list of professional procedures, the first page bold print on what's covered.
Let me just ask you about the schedule. The schedule of benefits... and you're right that it doesn't limit it to outpatient, but I actually thought that was your strongest point. But the first sentence in what is covered in that part of the certificate says that United will pay the benefits shown in the schedule of benefits for the following things, right? So isn't the way you look at this is you look to what is covered to find out what it's covered, and there it says radiology and lab pathology are outpatient only, and then you look to the schedule of benefits to see what it is that they'll pay, right? Isn't that the way this
is? No, I disagree with that. If you look at the first page, it said benefits are payable as shown in the schedule of benefits for the following. They list 8 items, radiology, lab pathology. The only place outpatient, you see the word outpatient, is what in the what is covered section. And by the way, if you look at the what is covered section, it's on A55 of the joint appendix.
Right.
First it says radiology benefit. It could have said and it should have said outpatient radiology benefit, but it doesn't. Same with number 6.
Doesn't it say?
I'm sorry, performed in an outpatient setting.
Yeah, it says, right.
Performed in an outpatient, right. It doesn't say in an outpatient only setting. There's about 25 references to lab pathology and radiology in this document that does not limit it to outpatient services. As the drafter of the document and as the insurer.
Could you just go back to my question about the schedule of benefits? Because if the what is covered identifies lab pathology and radiology as outpatient only, which it says, then why would the schedule of benefits say anything other than lab pathology and radiology? Because that's what's covered, outpatient only. So you look to the schedule to see what amount will be reimbursed.
I don't think that's the only way to read the document.
Tell me how else you could read it. And, because I told you, I think that's your strongest point. But tell me why that's wrong. Why would they have, your point is, in the schedule of benefits, it didn't say outpatient radiology, right?
Correct. It's not limited.
But if what is covered defines it as outpatient only.
First of all, it doesn't define it as outpatient only. The word only, you don't see the word only there.
And it says outpatient, doesn't it?
It does say outpatient, but doesn't say to the exclusion of inpatient.
Well, why would they say outpatient if it didn't mean outpatient?
It's ambiguous. At best, it's ambiguous. It's
you're proposing a rule of interpretation that would make pretty much every contract in America twice as long as it is. So anytime you said this, you'd have to say, and only this.
Now, ironically, if you look at the exclusion section, they do exclude benefit. They do exclude services before the effective date. Obviously, that wasn't necessary. But to address your point, at best, it's ambiguous. As the insurer, they could have and they should have put outpatient clearly. It can be reasonably read so as to include both inpatient and outpatient. That one reference to the word outpatient in the what is covered section does not trump the other 25 references to unqualified lab pathology and radiology services. At best, you have two reasonable interpretations, in which case it becomes ambiguous.
Why would they say performed in an outpatient setting?
Why wouldn't they put outpatient?
Unless they were saying that it was these services performed in an outpatient setting that were covered.
It's clearly not.
I mean, it's completely unnecessary language under your reading.
My reading is that of a reasonable person. A reasonable ARP consumer getting this. Remember, it's an insurance contract. You have to be clear as to what is not covered and what is excluded.
If you and I have a contract for me to sell you a car, that doesn't mean I have an obligation to sell you a refrigerator, because it doesn't say I will sell you a car but not a refrigerator.
But if you look on the first page, big print, radiology services.
Which first page are we at?
I'm sorry, the first page of the certificate, A49.
Mm-hmm. What are you looking at now? Just read what you want us to read.
Benefits are payable as shown in the schedule of benefits for the following services.
Right.
Radiology services, lab pathology services. You read that and you go right to the schedule of benefits. It refers to the list of professional procedures. Lo and behold, there too there's no outpatient limitation or qualification. Sticking the word outpatient in the within the text when there are 25 other references to unqualified lab pathology and radiology, it best creates an ambiguous contract.
All right, so I'm not sure I totally focused on the first question Judge Williams asked you, but as to your breach of contract claim, do you agree that the only thing we're looking at is a certificate of insurance?
Until you find it ambiguous, well, I think if it's two reasonable interpretations, then it's ambiguous, and then you can look to the extrinsic evidence.
Right, but we have to find first.
Correct.
Some ambiguity.
All correct. Right.
You want to talk about your other?
Sure. While you have the joint appendix open, if you turn back to page 41 of the joint appendix, under peace of mind, starting at XXX dollars per month, it says get lab tests. Second bullet point, lab tests up to XXX dollars per procedure. There's just no qualification. You look at A45. This is what defendants sent ARP members. Apply today for the ARP medical plan if you are without coverage, you need a bridge until Medicare. How a reasonable ARP consumer is going to interpret that is relevant. The district court didn't consider that. To the left, on the same page to the left, they tout the insurance as being endorsed by ARP.
Can I just ask you, you wouldn't, if it's not ambiguous, you wouldn't get to any of this, right? This relates to your misrepresentation claim.
Right, that's what I asked you to talk
isn't
about.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
What you're quoting now relates to your misrepresentation claim.
Correct.
Not the breach of contract claim.
If it's ambiguous, you look at instructions.
Exactly, but if the district judge is right that it's not ambiguous, then you wouldn't look to these other documents for the breach of contract claim, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
We're looking at this document for the misrepresentation claim.
Right.
And it also says essential health benefits, lab tests, again, unqualified.
Where does that argument stop? I mean, people who need medical care generally regard anything the doctor proposes as essential. So, I mean, except for clearly elective surgery, other clearly elective procedures. So, it would seem to me, on your interpretation, no limits whatever could be legitimate once a material, using the word, the adjective essential, went out.
That's not true, but I think it has to be looked at from
Why isn't it? What's the limit? I mean, you have the sufficiency claim, which I think
it's a question of fact.
The same problem.
It's a question of fact for a reasonable juror to see what an ART member would think would be essential.
Well, my suspicion is that lots of plaintiffs, after they found the limits, would find whatever procedure they had to be essential, and it would be very hard to say not.
But essential isn't, there's also the certificate. It's not defined by essential. A person purchasing this plan based on these representations was misled. Surely they would think inpatient radiology, lab pathology would be essential. Or at least a jury should be given the opportunity to decide whether they would have. Now, at this point, I'd like to also point out that in reaching his decision, the district court refused to consider a press release that was issued by Senator Grassley, wherein he reviewed the marketing material for this Medical Advantage plan, and he determined that it was misleading. Surely the senator is a reasonable man.
Yeah, but that's not the question that the judge is supposed to ask. That's just one. Sure, he's a senator and he's chairman of the committee, but he's just one person. The question he's asking is, that the court asks at this point, is what would a reasonable person think? You don't take testimony on that.
Correct. I'm not asking to go only by his opinion or to follow his opinion, but you can't ignore that it was found to be misleading and then go on to say that no reasonable consumer can find it misleading.
Well, don't agree too quickly with that, the assumption in the question, because you cited a case from the Seventh Circuit where, as you quote, testimony could be introduced as to what would a reasonable person think. The court making the point that your client is not a federal judge reading an insurance contract. And in that case, the plaintiff had offered and said she wanted to introduce evidence of what would a reasonable person think. And I thought that was the gist of why you were offering or trying to get the judge to take judicial notice that at least one other person.
Correct.
Had received complaints from people who said they were misled and at least was giving those complaints some credence.
Correct.
You know, your complaint rests on the marketing materials, right? AARP's marketing materials and the letters and that sort of thing, right? But am I right that that Senator Grassley's conclusions about it being misrepresented rest on information people got from AARP telephone operators?
They were referring to, I know one specific representation was the bridge to insurance, which is on the first page of this.
I'm talking about the, doesn't he say that what was misleading was the information given by telephone?
Not in total, no.
But he does rely on that, doesn't he?
He cites several representations.
Yeah, and that's not part of your case. So, you know, even if he's right that those calls are misrepresentations, they are. That's not what you're claiming.
It's the same misrepresentations. A bridge to Medicare. What does that mean to an ART member? If you're getting this as an ART member, would you think you would be covering inpatient radiology, lab pathology? I think it's a question for the jury on what a reasonable person would think they were getting, mm-hmm. or what was being offered to them. And I think it's for a jury to determine whether defendants violated the CPPA, it's 283904, subsections A, D, E, and F.
Let me ask you an unrelated question. If the district court had allowed you to file an amended complaint, what would you have said differently than what you've said so far? How would it have been different?
I would have put in more of the Senator Grassley's information, some of which was not available when we filed our complaint. I would have put in facts as to how they responded to the investigation and changes that they made in response to the investigation. Uh-huh. And I possibly would have added additional allegations as to money ARP receives from selling insurance.
Uh-huh. Back to your misrepresentation claim. How do you distinguish those cases that where courts have held that what I'll call puffery is not enough? In other words, the Allstate insurance case, you're in good hands with Allstate.
Right. And then the Pearson case said satisfaction guaranteed. Right. I think this is incomparable.
Why?
First of all, they're telling you lab tests. They're specifically saying lab tests, which is which doesn't get their accurate statements. Essential health benefits, I think, is incomparable to you're in good hands with Allstate. Those are really unquantifiable statements. You can't get, even the jury, I don't think, could come up with an explanation for you're in good hands with Allstate. But I think if you ask a jury what essential health benefits means, you can get a quantifiable answer.
Wouldn't you think that the chart that's part of the promotional materials, mm-hmm, would be pretty, the one at A46, would be something that the consumer's eye would go to pretty quickly? And it's that has your magic word only.
Right, it has it outpatient only as listed as an additional benefit. Right. Additional to what? A reasonable ART member could think it's an addition to inpatient only. They could have, defendants could have and should have come out and told people, we are not going to cover inpatient lab pathology or radiology services. Their failure to do so is actionable under the CPPA. And if you notice also, it's a highlight sheet. It's not the full benefits being offered. It's what defendants chose to put in the sheet.
Yeah. So where does that cut?
Benefit highlights. It's not a benefit sheet. If you look at the top of the page.
I see that, but it doesn't seem to me that removes the only.
You also remember, you have to read this document as a whole. Here it might say lab pathology outpatient only. The page before, it says lab tests.
Now, it seemed to me that a chart of this sort was the sort of thing that a customer's eye would naturally go to, because it sort of lays things out in what seems to be a comparatively systematic way. And when the customer, potential customer, gets to that, the outpatient only is pretty strongly there.
I think what you're saying is a perfect question of fact for a jury. What would a consumer's eye go to? That's for a jury. The jury reading, receiving this marketing material that says lab tests unqualified, looking at the chart saying an additional benefit, outpatient radiology, it's a jury question.
So your view is that to protect itself from a misrepresentation case, they should have said, or they said outpatient only, it should have said outpatient only and not inpatient. Right?
They just should have added the statement, this plan is not going to cover inpatient lab pathology and radiology, or the page before they should have put outpatient.
The word only isn't enough.
Correct. Uh-huh. I don't think a reasonable consumer looking at this marketing material is going to believe that a bridge to Medicare, somebody without other insurance coverage, would reasonably expect that they're not going to get inpatient radiology, lab pathology coverage, which are necessarily expensive procedures.
And let me ask you another thing. I couldn't find the case, but cases have made the point about insurance contracts and how they're presented to the consumer. And I noted that in your brief, in describing the certificate in this critical point, we've been looking at it, A56, where it's describing the radiology benefit and the laboratory pathology benefit. At least in the version that's in the record before us, the notations are set apart from the descriptive text. as your eye might therefore be drawn to that more than if it were just part of a single paragraph, if you understand what I'm saying. In your brief, the way you present it to us, there is no separation. Yet the policy here, as it's presented on A55, has that separation. So when you're looking at this document, you say, oh, I get radiology benefits, and then there's this note that says, ah, yeah, but you don't get it under these circumstances.
What the note does is it even takes away any outpatient benefit if you're then directly admitted to the hospital.
Well, you're no longer an outpatient.
So then you should get nothing? I think it's reasonably read that the hospital doesn't want to pay both outpatient and inpatient.
Yes, and the question is, what do they have to do to say it?
Only if you're admitted to the hospital from the emergency room. If you're not, then they pay outpatient.
That doesn't mean they don't pay inpatient. You're making a lot of assumptions that a reasonable consumer would not make and should not have to make in reading an insurance contract. It should clearly spell out what is and is not covered, and this document does not do that. And it's for a jury to determine how they would read this contract.
So you're saying there should have been a paragraph that says precisely what? Right. If you were working for the insurance company here, what would you tell them this policy should have said?
First of all the references to radiology and lab pathology, I would have put the word outpatient before it, and in the exclusions.
That would be enough.
Yeah, that's my point. You got outpatient only and not inpatient.
The problem is there's 25 references to lab pathology and radiology without any limitation. First thing I would do actually is put it in the exclusions, to tell you the truth. I would put it in, you don't want to mislead anybody.
And you're saying that the exclusions have to refer to things that have never been indicated as covered.
But this
right?
is. But this is radiology.
Sort of doubles the length of the document.
Radiology and lab pathology, you can't boast that you cover it and then in small print take half the right away. Or argue that it's small, that, you know, then you're taking half the right away. There's 25 references. The first page, bold print, that's what, you know what a consumer would actually look at? The first thing they would look at is what is excluded. When you look at the what is excluded here, you don't see anything about inpatient lab pathology and radiology.
But don't, when we think about what a reasonable person would think about this, don't we have to assume the reasonable person reads the whole document?
Even if you read this whole document, it's not clear. Again, this is an insurance contract.
You would agree with what I just said.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. It's an insurance contract. It has to be written so that the proverbial man on the street can understand it. And you have to put your exclusions clear so people understand it. All this colloquy is because there's different reasonable interpretations of this contract. Had they put it in the exclusions, we wouldn't be here.
All right. Why don't we hear from counsel for United Healthcare Insurance.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Scott Etzen on behalf of United. With the Court's permission, the defendants have divided their time, and so I'll take the first 12 minutes, and Mr. Kostin on behalf of AARP has the remaining three.
All right.
The District Court properly dismissed this case because the plaintiff received every specific benefit she was promised. In fact, the only category of benefits that she's ever identified that she thinks were wrongfully denied were benefits related to radiology, laboratory, and pathology tests that were conducted during her confinement as a
hospital. Well, from her perspective, that's a big problem. That's $40,000.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I'm not sure we know exactly how much the tests were.
Well, I mean, let's say it's around that. The total cost was $45,000.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. You paid for the room and board.
We paid for the room and board. We paid for the surgeon.
Right.
We paid for 10 physician benefits.
So what's your view as to what the outstanding amount is?
Your Honor, I don't think...
approximately.
I think you could assume it's around $40,000, except
it's thousands of dollars. That's the point.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So when you say only, I mean, from her perspective, that's a big only.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and if I was misstating, what I meant is the only category of benefits that she says was wrongfully denied were those. But the first marketing materials she received specifically labeled radiology and lab pathology benefits outpatient only. Now, plaintiff has quoted and cited A41 of the joint appendix, which is the first page of a two-page cover letter. At A42, which is the second page of that two-page cover letter, it refers the reader to the enclosed marketing brochure, which was contained in the same packet. The chart, which lists radiology and lab pathology benefits outpatient only, is clearly is on page 3, I think, of the four-page brochure in full color. And the color version is filed with the court online. So we submit that the district court was correct to conclude that, as a matter of law, no reasonable consumer could interpret outpatient only to mean anything other than outpatient only. And so, and one thing I think we need to be a little bit clear about, because it's, I think, still somewhat unclear at this day, is to the extent plaintiff is alleging that she was promised something other than inpatient testing benefits that were denied, she's never identified any statement promising those benefits and never come forward with exactly what they are. So I think the entire case collapses down to her claim that she was promised but denied inpatient testing benefits.
I understand the first point. I'm not sure I understand the second point.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You said she hasn't identified anything where a statement was made that she was promised something that she thinks she was entitled to.
Other than
and
inpatient testing.
She hasn't identified what it is she thinks she's entitled to.
Other than inpatient testing benefits. And so I think it's unclear to me, and I think to frame the case, it has to come down to her claim for inpatient testing benefits, because if she's seeking anything else, she's never identified it and there's no statement that promises it.
Your position is that this contract's unambiguous, like the district. So how do we... I mean, as counsel points out, there are many places where it refers to radiology and laboratory pathology where it isn't limited. So, I mean, what's the standard we apply to know whether it's ambiguous or not?
But, Your Honor, you apply ordinary.
Did we just decide for ourselves? I mean, if we look at this and say we don't think it's ambiguous, that's enough? Or do we have to put ourselves in the position of the average person purchasing these agreement, which could include a lot of people with, you know, significantly less education than we have,
Your Honor,
less reading ability than we have. I mean, how do we do that? How do we know?
Your Honor, I think the cases in
that's why it's so comforting just to let juries figure these things out, right? Because, I mean, when you're asking the judge to do it, you're asking them to take it away from the jury.
Well, there is a role for the court.
I know there's a role for the court. That's why I'm asking you, how do we know we're applying the correct standard?
Well, Your Honor, I think the cases in both D.C. and Arizona, whichever law applies, and universally, say that the first question in construing an insurance contract is how do you construe it as a contract? Right. There are canons of construction that if you find a contractual ambiguity, you construe it in the favor of the insured. But courts in both the relevant jurisdictions and I think across the country have held that the first question, the preceding question, is whether there's a contractual ambiguity.
Yes, I know that. That's why I ask you the question.
Yes, Your Honor.
And how do I know that? No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
I believe the standard is that of ordinary contract interpretation, and specifically the court has to give effect to all the provisions of the contract. There is plaintiff's entire argument on this point is that there are provisions that mention testing that don't specifically distinguish inpatient and outpatient, but except for the key provision that says, quote, what is covered. And what's important here is she has no answer to what performed in an outpatient setting is supposed to mean, except that what she says in the brief is it's there to confirm that outpatient benefits are in addition to inpatient benefits. But there is nowhere in any of the papers that specifically reference inpatient testing benefits. So there would be no reason for the contract to draw that distinction in the first place, because it's not there anywhere else. It's there in the key definition provision. The other provision, and it came up during...
Your response to Judge Tatel on the breach of contract claim
Your Honor.
Is that the court must assume that the purchaser reads the contract and that the person is of average intelligence and could understand simple sentences.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think it is undisputed. I heard during counsel's opening argument that a reasonable person reads the entire agreement. And I want to point out, I mean, this is also, it's not exactly buried under tricky contract or insurance language. It's in a section entitled What is Covered? And there are cases from all over, including D.C. and Arizona, that say that unless something comes within the ambit of the affirmative provisions, there's no basis for excluding it, or there's no need for the insurer to exclude it as a matter of contract interpretation, which leads to her fraud claim, which again comes back to outpatient only, which was contained in the very first packet of materials this plaintiff ever received.
Now, Judge Williams asked counsel, well, under your view, the insurance contract would be longer. Well, we all know, as purchasers of insurance, that length has never been a problem for the insurance industry. So why wouldn't you just put in this type of contract where you're dealing with AARP members as your target population? Be advised, if you're in the hospital, you pay for all of these services that are listed.
Well, Your Honor, if I could unpack that, because I'm not clear whether you're talking about the contract or the marketing
materials. I'm talking about the fraud. You had moved to the fraud.
Yes, Your Honor. It may well be that there would be more specific and more more specific and louder ways to have said outpatient only. But I think it's undisputed that the standard is still a reasonable consumer who reads all the materials, and it was clearly labeled outpatient only. The rest of the statements plaintiff talk about are things like essential benefits, but essential benefits, United submit, at least in the context of this, is defined as what's provided for in the brochure, which is radiology and laboratory pathology tests and an outpatient basis.
I thought your argument was going to be that essential benefits is defined by the certificate of insurance.
Well, it is, Your Honor. It's what's in the certificate of insurance, but what's in the certificate of insurance tracks what is in that chart. And so within the context, my point is that when plaintiff applied, she had this chart in front of her, and one thing the chart said was radiology, laboratory, and pathology benefits would be outpatient only. So if she disagreed with that or thought that was insufficient, she had the information in front of her at that time. If the court has no further questions, I will yield to Mr. Costa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I'm Bill Costin on behalf of Defendant AARP. We rely on Mr. Edson's argument for the common counts, which would be the particularly the third-party beneficiary and D.C. Consumer Protection Act. I would add, Your Honor, that on the breach of contract count against United only, I think the argument has been framed that the contract claim is limited to inpatient laboratory pathology and radiology. I believe the same limitation is true for the D.C. Consumer Protection Act, and I would point, Your Honors, to page 12 of the appellant's reply brief dated November 15, in which the counsel says, quote, plaintiff's injury under the D.C. Consumer Protection Act stems from her having enrolled in and paid premiums for the AARP plan and incurring unreimbursed costs for inpatient laboratory pathology and radiology services. And I think Mr. Edson did a commendable job in pointing out how the marketing materials specifically said radiology in an outpatient basis only. There is a count that is against AARP alone, that is the unjust enrichment account. If this court affirms Judge Leon's decision on the breach of contract and the D.C. Consumer Protection Act, the unjust enrichment will fall. Even, however, if you were to consider that the case should be remanded, the unjust enrichment dismissal could nonetheless be sustained on appeal under the Jordan Keys case. The unjust enrichment argument is essentially that AARP received royalties But the Jordan Keys case indicates that where a benefit to an entity is known to the plaintiff in the first instance, then it is not unjust enrichment, with the word unjust being underscored in the Jordan Keys opinion.
There was in an extraordinarily small print footnote, was it not?
It was, but sometimes you find solace wherever you can. But I think the easier way to get rid of unjust enrichment, without getting into that, is just to say Judge Leon was right on the principal issue in this case. Was there adequate disclosure of the limitation on radiology, lab, and pathology to outpatient only?
How would you define how this court is supposed to define what a reasonable consumer would think?
Well, I think you can do what Judge Leon did and say, I have all the materials before.
He's a federal judge.
Correct, but he is a federal judge who's entrusted with the job of looking at the D.C. statute, and the statute, not common law, but a D.C. statute where the judge is empowered to decide, does this state a cause of action?
What do you think the Seventh Circuit was getting at in the case Walker that appellant cites?
I think the Seventh Circuit was saying if it's a close case, let the jury have at it. But this is not a close case.
The court uses language, if it's conceivable that the plaintiff could offer evidence. I mean, that's very broad language.
Well, that's why they say the D.C. Circuit is superior to the Seventh Circuit, Judge Rogers.
I've never heard that said. Either
well,
yay or nay.
Those of us who practice here believe that. Judge Leon did his job here. You can't ask a judge to do a better job.
This is not a criticism of the judge. I am
right.
Trying to understand what is the legal standard that is to be applied.
Well, here...
In other words,
yes.
Your members are not... what do we call them now, the Generation X? Your members are...
I'm a member.
They have to
be careful. I'm a member.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we're all qualified to be members, but what, it's age 50 and over?
Yes, Your Honor.
And this was focused at people who were out of work and not Medicare eligible? This was a bridge policy?
For purposes of the argument and what the complaint states, that's what's stated in the complaint, yes, Your Honor.
Right. So how is the court to view this?
The court, fortunately, we have here a plaintiff that has said, my theory is there was a misrepresentation about inpatient radiology and laboratory. And on that very narrow issue, which they stated again in their reply brief,
right.
Judge Leon scoured everything that was presented to this plaintiff and said, no reasonable juror could find.
I thought your response was going to be, that precise issue is addressed in plain, simple language, both in the chart and in the certificate of insurance.
And that...
Because we all understand that the district court judge here is, you know, a well-educated legal
I don't understand
mind.
That has to do with anything. We don't owe the district court any deference here, do we?
No, it's...
Sorry, I mean, we're making this judgment ourselves, so...
I mean,
we all have a lot of respect for Judge Leon, but we have to decide it here, right? So,
yes, Your Honor.
Why do you keep telling us that Judge Leon scoured the record and reached his conclusion? That's irrelevant to us.
Well, then we would invite
to agree with you.
We would invite you to scour the record in the identical way.
Okay. Well, then what Judge Rogers is asking you is, once you do that, what's the standard? Don't just tell us what the answer is. How do we know?
The standard is there any ambiguity on the issue of a promise of radiology or laboratory benefits on an inpatient basis.
Well, their argument is, look, your average person's, when they look at one of these things, what are they going to look at first? They're going to look at how much they're going to get. So they look at the schedule of benefits, and it tells them they're going to get $1,600 for radiology. Now, sure, you could say here, and I could say, well, yeah, but a reasonable person would also look at the rest of it. But how do we know that a reasonable person wouldn't do that, wouldn't look right to where the numbers are, And once that's in their mind, then that's it.
Well, I would...
How do we know that?
How do we know that when a person reads the English language, lab pathology outpatient only at A46, that they would say, oh, that must also include inpatient?
You're not dealing with my question. My question was, why wouldn't a reasonable person, when they look at one of these things, it's a lot of words, they would go to where they find out what the reimbursement amount is. And that's the schedule of benefits, and the schedule of benefits is not so limited. Now, your answer is, well, a reasonable person would have to have looked at the rest of the contract also, and they'd see that there it's outpatient only. But how do we know that? The advantage to giving this to a jury is that we can find out.
Fortunately,
we can give it to a jury, and the jury will tell us what a group of reasonable people think about this.
Fortunately, we've all agreed that a reasonable person has to look at the entire document. And here, the entire document on A55, the radiology benefit, it says if you incur a charge for radiology performed in an outpatient setting, there will be a $2,700 procedure, with the note that Judge Roberts and Judge Williams, I believe, referred to earlier, that says if you're admitted initially, if you're there outpatient and you go to inpatient,
Judge
it's
Roberts,
no longer covered.
Just made a mistake.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, counsel.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You confused me. Go ahead.
All right. Go ahead.
So a reasonable person does have a duty to look at the entire record. Here, the entire record makes it crystal clear. No reasonable person could have concluded otherwise on these two benefits, radiology and pathology. Thank you.
So we don't have a case where the complaint alleges that this person, you know, left school after the sixth grade and is virtually illiterate, or that expert testimony could show or could be offered to show that a reasonable person would look at sort of what's covered, see the $1,600, and that would stick in that person's mind.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in fact, when you read the complaint, it indicates that Mrs. Whiting received all these materials and read them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. Counsel for appellant.
Your Honor, if I may, I just want to make one point in addressing Judge Tatel's question before, what would I add in an amended complaint? Mm-hmm. I'd also point to the fact that the current marketing materials comes out and says that it's not included on an inpatient basis, and they give you an example of a hospital bill and as to what would and would not be covered.
But that shows, and it's always true in these cases, that there one can imagine language that makes something clearer. That is always true. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a case.
They come right out and say it, which they should have done from the beginning, and that's all plaintiff's been saying. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.
Stand, please. This honorable court is now adjourned until January 13th at 9:30 in the morning.
Okay.